So the study was called The Urban Rise and Fall of Airlead and the Latent Surge and Retreat of Social Violence. That points towards the thrust of the study. Could we start by talking about how the researchers went about collecting the data?
Well, that's a good question. And the researchers collected data from other bureaus that had themselves assembled the information as part of long-term monitoring. So the criminology data, I understand, came from the FBI, from police reports that were passed down to the FBI for each of the six cities that were used in this in that study. In terms of the lead in air information, what they did, they calculated that using data from state gasoline usage, city traffic volume and average miles per gallon, the amount of lead in each of the different grades of fuel and each of the different amounts of fuel used. And so they that was a derivative, the lead in air was a derived parameter, but based on pretty good science on other data that they've already published in other journals.
So as I understand it, it looked at the lead content in the air of these six cities, as you say, and then went ahead around 22 years and looked at the crime rates to see if there was a correlation between the two. What did the results show?
Well, yeah, just to reiterate, that's correct. They used a 22-year lag to look at the impact of exposure from when one is a child to the outcome when one is an early adult. And other people had looked at this lag time and deemed it was appropriate. In essence, they found that for every metric ton of lead released 22 years previous, there was an increase of 1.5 aggravated assaults per 100,000 that were reported. And they were able to show that their study, that 90% of the changes in the aggravated assault rate, both in time and place, and that's quite important because it adds to the robustness of the study, so they showed that the results were consistent and that 90% of the variation, i.e. the changes in the aggravated assault rate, was explained by the rise and fall of air lead.
That is an almost unbelievably high number, and I want to make sure that I understand exactly what it means. So is it saying that the fluctuations in rise and fall in the records kept by law enforcement agencies, more or less assaults, basically, can be put down almost entirely to lead in the air and not, say, programs that are being implemented by groups in the society or education levels and that sort of thing, that assaults can basically be attributed to the impact of lead in development?
Look, that's a very good question, and other people have asked exactly the same question. Are there other factors that may have been involved in this relationship? There are some limitations to this study. Those limitations are that there are issues such as migration behaviour and within the city spatial variation lead exposure that would add uncertainty to the results, but they argue that the statistical results are significantly strong to warrant further investigation at a more local scale. However, in undertaking their study, they also took it into account a range of other items, including education, income, and other types of poverty measures, in order to provide some control for their results. And even taking those into account, they still found that the correlation was really strong. And the pattern is really consistent, and it's consistent with previous studies that have linked these types of behaviours to crime, and it's consistent with other expected outcomes and the relationships that you expect from exposure to lead.
Does this strong correlation that exists between lead poisoning in children and then later assaults, can that, because of the high correlation, be proven as a cause and effect relationship from this study?
It's not a cause and effect relationship, and that's another great question of yours, but it's an association study. But I think what the authors go on to say in their study, they say it's a remarkably strong statistical association. It is an association study, and that's why they go on to say that it warrants deeper and further investigation. But when the correlation is so strong between the calculated atmospheric lead concentrations and the crime-related outcomes in early adults, it becomes very difficult to find alternative explanations.
And I think one of the things that struck me was that this didn't just say focus on a short period of time where lead levels were relatively consistent, saying that more crime is happening in areas where there is high lead. That, of course, could be explained away very simply. But the fact that as the lead levels rose and fell, the assault rates then did rise and fall 22 years later. It was that correlation that really struck me. I think we could move on to Broken Hill, our area here specifically, and in Australia. You said more study needs to be done in this area. Have studies like this been conducted in Australia?
No, studies like this haven't really been undertaken in Australia. Rick Nevin undertook some work and published that in 2007 when he looked at various countries across the globe, including Australia, and he showed there was a relationship between bloodletting kids and crime outcomes. However, there's been no specific city-based studies looking at lead towns and non-leaded towns, for example, and looking at the relationships and taking into account all the relevant covariates to understand if this type of behaviour is also visible in the information that we have here for Australians. There's no reason to assume there would be a different pattern. But it hasn't been done. It's an interesting area. And I think the fact that we make so much money from mining and the fact that we know that lead exposure is a serious problem, it warrants investigation. Because if we're seeing these patterns at relatively low levels of exposure, that would indicate that we need to sort of look at our regulatory regime in terms of emissions and also remediation and cleanup in areas, including Broken Hill, Port Pirie, Mount Isa, Esperance, Bullaroo, you know, etc., northwest Tasmania.
What would you like to see as a reaction to this study? How would you like to see people take this information and work with it?
I think the main message out of all of this work and all the ongoing work coming out in Australia and overseas in relation to lead exposure in children is that we need to reevaluate the risks, and everything is pointing in the same direction that we need to look at lowering the acceptable levels of lead in the environment. We need to look at remediation. We need to look at tightening licensing arrangements for industry. And of course, there'll be some pain attached to that with respect to industry, but it's the long-term outcomes. It's, you know, it's the legacy that we wish to leave behind, both in the environment and with our kids, who don't have an informed choice about these matters because they're exposed before they can really protest about it, that we leave behind the best legacy that we can, given the knowledge that we have. So we have got current practice, and I think then we need to now look at, is that current practice, does that constitute best practice? And I think the evidence suggests so far that that's not the case on many fronts. Look, I know it's a really sensitive issue in Broken Hill. People sort of don't want to know, we're not interested in this, there's no problem, we've lived here all our lives and there's all that sort of stuff goes on. And I don't know how we overcome that issue. But these are real issues. It's not invisible. Although lead itself is invisible in the dirt, it's indistinguishable from ordinary dirt. The effects aren't. And the effects vary between individuals, but on population scales like this, it's quite clear. The patterns, it's so clear in that study where it shows the natural log of aggravated assault rate versus the natural log of atmospheric lead. It's like hand in glove, isn't it? It becomes really difficult to escape from the fact that there must be very strong evidence that these things are related and that there's an association, because it's spread over time and place.
And do you think that the difficulty might be getting people in areas that are sensitive to actually sit up and take notice of the importance of this work?
Well, I think so, but I mean, what do they do? I mean, they say, well, what can we do about it? We can't afford to leave. This is our home. We love living here, and that's fair enough. Broken Hill's a great place. Been there several times. It's fantastic. The people there are fantastic. And it's a very difficult situation to actually face up to, and how do we deal with it if this stuff has blanketed our environment? And I think we then need to look to the environmental and health authorities to work together to do an audit, to clean up the place, to do absolutely everything that they can in order to minimise these exposures and preferably eliminate them. But I think individuals just need to be aware that there are these risks, and they can do things in and around their own home, you know, wet mop, etc., replace the soil in the garden, make sure there's no dust in the ceilings, for example. And even people fixing up their own homes and gardens, it's expensive, it costs money. But I don't think it's a reason, you can't just throw your hands up in the air and go, oh, this is beyond me, I can't do anything. because of the damaging effect that occurred.
Especially for something that's going to take 2 decades to see the fruits of the labour, it can be extremely difficult to mobilise people and energise them to face something that may even be hard to convince people in the beginning is a problem.
That's correct, because this problem, the impact of lead at this level is subclinical. The effects are insidious, but they're real costs. People have modelled them. People have demonstrated the relationships. So you can't really get away from those impacts. And it would be a mistake just to go, oh, it's all too hard. I think that would be a dereliction of our duty to the children who are unborn and the young children who exist now. And that's what it's really about.